Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tyre. E-Range EV tyres are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tyre with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetyres.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E tyres.com to find your EV's next set of tyres.
It's Friday. It's Friday the 22nd of December, which means it is not only Inside EV's podcast time, it's the last one of 2023 as we barrel towards the glory that will hopefully come in 2024. Hello, as ever, I'm your host, Alex Goy, and joined by a lot of very clever people. We have Miss Go Electric, Lacey. Hi, Lacey, how you doing?
Hello, everyone.
Hello. We have Hazel Southwell. Hi, Hazel.
You all right?
And finally, the boss man, Patrick George. Hello, sir.
Howdy, y'all.
Patrick, before we kick off with the news, what are you in this week? Last time it was a Merc. You're in another vehicle. It appears to have a roof bigger than my living room windows. What's going on?
I'll give you a hint, which is that I'm in a vehicle with a frunk that's bigger than my apartment in New York City. back in Texas, where I'm from, visiting family for Christmas, and I decided I had to, you know, you gotta do it right when you go to Texas. So I got myself an F-150 Lightning to test, and I love this truck. And I thought it'd be cool to drive and interesting, and I'm like, I didn't expect to kind of fall in love with it. And I would have no business owning this thing this big in New York City, but if I still lived here in Texas, I'd be trying to make a case for it somehow, because it's great. It does truck things, and it's got a frunk. You know, you put all your groceries in the frunk. You ever try to put groceries in a pickup truck bed? You know, like the milk out and it hits.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. Actually, it means there's like an indoor space in a pickup truck.
Yeah, which is great, because usually you put your groceries, you know, behind the seats or in the cab somewhere, then somebody can't sit there. Like, the pickup trucks are terrible for getting groceries, except for this one. It's brilliant. So, you know, I'm a lightning driving man now.
If only there was some sort of four-wheel transportation that had an enclosed space at the rear. One day those engineers will do it.
How am I going to tow a boat with that if I had a boat, which I don't, but I might someday, because, you know, that's the ultimate goal here in America, boat ownership. You know, that's when you know you've made it.
Yeah. Boat, yacht.
Yeah.
Trucks.
We can count my gear tunnel as rear storage, right? So it's somewhat there.
Oh, yeah. I think that counts. Lacey, where in the world are you right now?
I'm actually in Louisville right now. I'm on my way. So I just left Nashville yesterday. I'm done with my project for the rest of the year, and I'm driving my way back up to Michigan with a couple of e-bikes on the back of my truck. And so, yeah, getting back to Michigan.
In an enclosed space on the truck or in an open space on the truck? Sorry.
I couldn't fit them in the gear tunnel this time.
Blast. Well, we have an packed show. We've got a little bit of news coming up, and then we're going to talk about predictions, things we've liked over this year, stuff we think is going to happen next year. So, without further ado, let's get cracking with the news.
EV news.
So last week we spoke to you, Patrick, about your time on the Chevrolet Blazer launch, and you had things to say. I think we basically concluded that it was a car, and it was okay at being a car. But at the same time, Inside EV's very own Kevin Williams had a Blazer for a week design, and he was going to do a big old road trip in it. And his time with it lasted 28 hours. It did not go well. The story is incredible, but to sort of give you the cliff notes. He asked for it to be delivered without a full battery. He charged it fine before he left. He stopped off for a charge, and then the infotainment screen went blank. Then he had a quick reset, and then it went blank again. And then he charged in somewhere called Witherville, which is amazing. plugged in, was okay, then very much wasn't. And basically, we don't know what happened, but the car has bricked itself. Either the Blazer is very broken, or an Electrify America charger fed it some bad electricity. A bit like getting dodgy petrol, I guess.
Yeah, some bad electrons in there, you know.
Yeah.
They've
got knives. But it's not only Inside EVs that's had problems with its cars. Also, Edmunds has had a problem. So Edmunds bought a Blazer, and in 2 months it's had 23 issues, which is quite incredible. They first noticed some window switches not quite doing the do. It's had, like, there's a full list on their story, but some of it, their story says, you know, we would not consider these minor issues. They're quite major. So battery control modules going, brake system control modules, body control modules, the radio, drive control modules. There's lots of stuff that, you know, for a car, driving, braking, having a body, kind of essential.
Car stuff, many would say.
Yeah, important car stuff. And it's not
I think you're nitpicking.
I know. I just, despite my love of wonky hand-built British cars that do enjoy braking, I do think engines, you know, body control things, drive motors working, kind of essential. So, Patrick, you were sort of on the forefront. You were talking to Kevin on the phone as the car was busy turning itself inside out, fighting the bad electrons. What's your take on all this?
I mean, the first take is, like, the plan this week at Inside EVs was we power through an easy week with hopefully no news and rest up for on multiple fronts. That did not happen at all. We kind of went into this, Kevin did, and I'll preface this by saying, you know, Kevin Williams, I think, is one of the most knowledgeable journalists in the EV space. He's young, but he's exceptionally talented. He really knows the heck out of this stuff. When he worked at the drive, like, he was buying older EVs and fixing them up, and he was doing road trips and press cars in the Midwest. So he's an old hand at this. Like, he knows more about this stuff than probably I do, in a lot of ways. So he knows what he's doing. And when we set off, it was like, okay, we had this first drive experience in sunny Southern California for 3 hours. That's not really a test of what it can do. What we should test would be is driving from Ohio to North Carolina in December. And yeah, it's just immediately after setting off. And by the way, he was smart, I think, because he had them give him the car at 60%. He was like, okay, I'm going to charge it myself. And if I have any problems with charging or software, I'm going to know before I set off. And I thought that was really, again, the dude knows what he's doing. Like, he's sharp. Yeah. And, you know, I think the first problem he ran into was the infotainment screen just blinking out. And that controls a lot of stuff. But he was like, okay, this is annoying. It shouldn't happen, but it's drivable. And then once he went to that EA station, the car just lit up with every light on the dashboard like a Christmas tree. It's in limp mode, repair battery mode, whatever it was. I don't think it was running at full power. And he was like, you know what? I just can't drive this thing.
Yeah.
So it is a super disappointing outcome. I mean, I'll be honest. Like, this wasn't the story we wanted to tell. I thought we might run into some issues. It was an early car, but like, I was hoping this would work out and it would be proof that, you know, their GM's Ultium cars are up to speed and, you know, they're onto something. Like, I was kind of hoping that would be the case, but that's not what happened. And it was our job to tell people what happened. And it was a disaster. And then the day after, Edmunds published their story. A lot of great journalists over there and people I consider friends. I don't know if they published it because we did ours first or if they were planning to already, but either way, I'm sort of glad we weren't alone in this. And, you know, what we're seeing now is that this is the first real, like, big media reports of what a lot of people have posted on Ultium forums, Lyric and Hummer forums, and on Reddit. They've been talking about this stuff for months. Like, they've had the cars are on sale. They have had a lot of problems, and I think that it's just been a little quiet, but everyone's sort of realizing it now. And it's a bummer because this is not a first adopter crowd. These aren't people buying Fiskars. Like, the Chevy customer is going to expect this thing to work. And we don't know if it was a GM problem or an EA problem. I would argue that doesn't really matter. Distinction. Like, a person's going to buy this car, and if it doesn't work or it gets bricked, like, that's car, you know, to them. That's their experience with an electric vehicle. So
also, if the car can't detect that, I mean, if the EA charger is doing something so maliciously interfering that it's going to brick the car effectively, and is actively damaging the battery, the car should be detecting that that is happening and be saying like, unplug this now.
Yeah.
Like that's, that should as a minimum for safety standards be happening.
Lacey, as a Michigan dist, a Michigan, what is the collective, the collective name for you guys?
You know, it's just been really sad to see the launch of all the Ultium platform vehicles and how awful it has been. I wish it wasn't the case because I really was excited when GM came out and said that they're going to come out with all these different types of EVs in their model lineup. They're going 100% electric. Let's do it. And then this has just been the most horrific rollout because they keep trying to push out these models. And to me, it seems like it's weird because it's like they're not rushing because it's like this has taken a while for this to get going. But at the same time, it's like obviously you are rushing or something is not right. Like you need to really just like stop and collect your like thoughts and your ideas and figure out what is going wrong with the engineering from not only the battery component standpoint, but also from this software standpoint, because as far as I understand, that's also not like specific to this vehicle. It's pretty much like all Ultium platform vehicles are having a problem with software and battery issues. So how like they just need to like take a step back, stop trying to roll these vehicles out immediately. They're going to shoot themselves in the foot and people aren't going to have confidence in buying these vehicles, especially considering that GM is one of the few that is going to be able to get the federal tax incentive for new vehicles next year for many of their vehicles. I mean, some of them not as at first, but eventually later in the year, but still, like, that's a big
getting
deal.
Getting money off is great, but if you're getting money off of something that is now in two quite high profile cases has spectacularly gone wrong, that's not going to help, is it? I think the disappointing thing from my side of the pond, at least my little bit of it, is that Chevy has always been this brand that it makes the cars that people drive. You see them everywhere. Yeah. You know, it's a brand that should have this nailed by now. And it had a great opportunity to do something incredible. And then you read reports like this and you think, was there no testing? Have the engineers not done the thing? Because to get it wrong at this scale, it just seems, how did it get this far?
And then why do they keep pushing? It's like, stop.
Yeah. I mean, just to put on,
No, go ahead, please.
To put on a kind of like, okay, let's pretend that GM is Tesla and people will be going, yeah, but these are software issues. Like, like they are, and I would say that these are almost certainly all software issues. Like the software is so crucial to managing all of the control of charging and the stuff like the braking. This is almost certainly not a physical issue. This is not a question of like, are the batteries sitting right? Is everything being put together right? Whatever. So yes, in a sense, it's probably something that probably can, again, the Tesla kind of fans' favorite sort of excuse, be cured with an OTA update. Maybe it needs something more severe, and quite probably once it's happened, the cars need to go and be checked over, because you don't know that it hasn't done something critical. But they should not be coming out the door with software this bad after this long. Like, especially because this is not the first EV software that GM has written. Like, they did do an EV before. And although Ultium is you know, a higher, like, it's much more powerful as a platform than what they were working with before, it's not, that should be something that can scale. There's not something infinitely more complicated than what was happening previously going on.
Yeah, it's disappointing. And last thing I'll add before we move on to the rest of the news is like this thing got it like bricked itself at an Electrify America station. This wasn't like Crazy Steve's discount Electron store, 100 volt outlet running out of a diesel generator in the middle of nowhere. I mean, damn, things are everywhere.
I hear you want some of them electrons.
Crazy Steve is really reliable, man. Like,
yeah.
All right, he's really sound. He'll do anything for you.
I'm we sorry, love Crazy Steve.
I'm sorry I spoke ill of Crazy Steve. I take it back. I'll send
it's Crazy
back.
Barry. He's yeah. the one you want to look out for.
But it's like, this is the company they all work with. It's like, and you get 3 years of free EA charge. It's like, you all work with this company. We know they kind of suck too. They've neither electrified nor done much for America, despite that name. But like, come on, y'all. I don't know. I hope 24 is a better year for GM's sake, but ain't looking good as we close out 23. But wasn't the only car company that had problems this week. Am I right, Ella? Yes.
Yeah. So from one wonky car company to another, frankly incredible and eye-opening report came out from Reuters. The headline kind of sums it up. Tesla blamed drivers for failures of parts it long knew were defective. Basically, bits of Teslas were braking on super low mile cars. There's a case of one in Singapore that had in 2019, a 99 mile car, the rear left half shaft shattered into three pieces and pierced a bit of the drive unit. There's tales of cars with, you know, a little over 100 miles, suspension bits going bang, steering racks not working, wheels falling off, kind of essential to a car, wheels. Now, the interesting thing is, in cases, it seems to be everywhere apart from China, where they were recalled, Tesla spent a lot of time and money telling people that, oh, it's your driving, or it's something wrong with the vehicle beforehand. Essentially telling someone that your new car, well, clearly you've been driving it like an absolute weapon for 100 miles. The thing is, some studies were done, some research was done. In 2019, they found that $4 million in warranty repairs were made on specific suspension arms and bits and what have you, on those on fairly new cars. So there was evidence there saying that this is what we have to pay on warranty. This is what's going on. This is ridiculous. There's a chap called Jamie Mimshall, I think, who's quite low down the piece, but he was saying that his Model Y had a steering issue, and in his words, it tried to kill me, which is not ideal.
Not what you want.
And pardon?
Not what you want.
Not what you want. No, not from a new car. The quote that gets me though is the story of Andrew Lundeen from Santa Rosa, who while he was driving his wife's 2018 Model 3, he rode over a speed bump and lost the power steering. He was told that the power steering connector had corroded, which a California car, 4 years old, like that's jazzy. The manager said the likely cause was a car wash, which he described as a known problem. Come on now. Lundeen paid to replace it. But he said he was so shocked by the manager's frank explanation of Tesla's part failures that he wrote it down. And this quote blows my mind. All I can tell you, the Tesla manager said, is we're not a 100-year-old company like GM and Ford. We haven't worked out all the bugs yet. Are you joking?
Well, like, they are different bugs.
They are so different bugs. They're hardware
having software
bugs.
Problems, yeah. Then, but I believe you can put a Chevy Blazer through a car wash.
Yeah, well, you don't say it. Whether it leaves the car wash, we don't know. But it shouldn't melt while it's there, and its wheels should stay on. Yeah, this is kind of stuff, because I know it's been very easy and I think quite fashionable for a lot of journalists over the midst of time to Tesla bash and say, well, they're not very well built and they're built in a tent and the working conditions aren't great. And, you know, while it's an easy thing to do and say based off of some news reports, this report is damning, especially when you have the numbers in there that say this is a problem we have had to fix a lot. So it's a known issue. And the fact that it was a recall in China, but not anywhere else, was staggering. So Lacey, what are your thoughts?
I mean, I have mixed feelings here, because it's like, you know, every car company has problems with, you know, recall. I mean, we've seen it in the news even the last few weeks that there are some major recalls happening right now, and we see it all the time with all the other automakers. But I will say, from a standpoint of having like the direct sales model, which I truly believe in, I think that it should exist in the United States. And I think that consumers should have the choice to be able to buy a car from not a dealer if they don't want to. But there should be, and not saying that they're not, I don't know what the solution is here. So there should be a way that 100% people can be reporting these issues in a way that forces the manufacturer to truly be responsible on providing transparent data on resolving and recalling components like this that fail. If it's in high enough numbers, whatever the reports that they're seeing here, it should be taken seriously. And why I'm saying this is because, you know, we have a 2016 Model S, and the original computer, I mean, I'm sure you guys heard about this in the news a long time ago, was the original computer was having some issues and it was blacking out and they had to have a chip update. And ultimately, like, there were problems with this that the whole screen would go completely black and wouldn't be usable. And there was a lot of reports of it, and it was kind of like a push on Tesla, like, you should recall this because of this. You should fix this hardware and replace it for the owners. But it was kind of like this weird wishy-washy where they were like, well, we will replace it, but no, we're not going to replace it type weird vibe. And then ultimately, like, we just paid the $2,000 to upgrade the computer and fix it because Tesla kept being so wishy-washy about whether or not they were going to fix the car, like, fix the computer. And it's like, you know, you shouldn't get in a situation where if there are that many people that are reporting this as an issue, like, it needs to be more forceful that they repair and recall and take care of those warranty repairs. And I understand the manufacturer doesn't want to do it because that costs them money. But and dealers, like, that's why they don't mind, because dealers get paid to do those warranty repairs. So they like, you know, having, that's their incentive of getting paid to, you know, say, this is how many labor hours it took us. Wonder why it took four instead of like one, you know, that type of ordeal of, you know, where the money's coming from. So I think there needs to be more strict, you know, enforcement on that kind of stuff.
Patrick, you have your concerned face on.
That's just my normal face, honestly. yeah, there's a lot going on in the world right now. But it's like, yeah. I don't know, I think it's everything I've seen indicates, and experience personally indicates, like, the quality on the Tesla cars has gotten way better over the years. I think Model 3, Model Y, those are really dialed in at this point. They don't have the weird issue they did, you know, 5-6 years ago. But yeah, as Lacey said, it's how they treated, knowing about this issue, it's how they treated the customer, it's how they treated the warranty payouts. That's what's at issue here. And, like, honestly, not a great ending to this year for Tesla and Elon Musk, if we're being honest. We had the major autopilot recall. I think he's got more of a public black eye than ever. This is coming out now. They announced the Hyperloop the company or program is closing down entirely. It's just, there's a lot of L's for Elon at the moment. And I don't know how much Cybertruck is going to fix that whenever it drops. But,
and of course, he has yet to tell a good joke on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, we're asking the impossible. He can land us on Mars, but that one, I don't know if that's doable or not. So, you know, bummer for Tesla owners out there. I hope this company and a lot of friends gets its act together, but who knows? I think that we on the software front too had a lot to say about we had some news to discuss about Apple's plans for the future, which is basically like your whole dashboard on these cars, starting with Porsche and Aston Martin, you know, two of America's top selling car brands, obviously. They're just going to be taken over by Apple CarPlay.
Cars of the people, Patrick, is what they are. They're cars of the people.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyone can have the new Porsche or Aston Martin, maybe.
Yeah, and as someone who owns four Aston Martins, I'm very excited about this. that's a lot of CarPlay. I mean, hey, Hazel, what do we think here?
I think so there's two elements of this that I'm like, one of which is that, like, car sensors are not generic. Car sensors and connectivity and the ways that cars are mapped out in terms of the wiring harness and stuff that gets to the computers, and the way that the sensors operate and what they specifically do, and how that fits into the ADAS or safety features of the car, that is different across every car. It's different even across cars of the same brand, even from the same year, because cars are different shapes and things, you know.
Really? Are there some with sealable interior luggage places?
But yeah, like, because obviously the height specifically of the positioning of a sensor within, say, the front of a, or rear of a car, it is quite crucial to how it understands things like distance, or how it's looking at surfaces and stuff like that. So I personally would not want a third party piece of software trying in any way to either possibly on, I'm not saying it's going to sort of like interfere with, but certainly like there is a limited level, and okay, very, 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 very fast, like incomprehensibly fast, but there is a sort of slight limit to the amount of information that can be thrown around within the level of copper connectivity in a car. And that needs to be instant to the safety systems, not to, I don't know, why does Apple CarPlay want to be involved?
Like, because Apple Car, because Project Titan's coming, so they want to take over all the data.
So you're thinking some proper evil empire industrial espionage through making your life easy. Is that the lacy take? Right. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying I want it. I'm not an Apple girly, so I'm an Android, so I don't really like CarPlay as the concept because I'm Pixel, Team Pixel all the way. I'll give my life to Google instead.
You with your green messages.
I can't see an advantage to a Porsche or Aston Martin customer where this would, provided you can, you know, if you want to connect your Apple CarPlay so you can have your Spotify and you've got all your Google Maps, not Apple Maps, whatever. I'm also a Pixel girly. So that's all instantly integrated. Yes, lots of people like that. Like, that is something that it should be, you know, a base piece of convenience, especially in a luxury vehicle. But I do not see what possible further advantage you would get to surrendering the car's own systems to Apple CarPlay.
Yeah, and it's that's from an unusual perspective, sure, but it's also like you get. I'm not excusing it because like GM's decision to like abandon CarPlay and Android Auto has been really controversial, but it's like I get their perspective. When you're a car company and you look at this and that's the dashboard of the future, and you're like, okay, so what? We're just getting car manufacturers for Apple now. Like, they run the software, they get all that revenue that we want to do. Like, screw that, we'll do it ourselves. Kind of badly, but like I can see where they're pissed about that. Like, it's like, okay, if the car of the future is a smartphone on wheels, they say, like, of course Apple wants to be in on that and have that computer ecosystem extend to this new platform that's coming out. But like, I could see, I think that it's going to come to a head between the car companies and the tech companies, like who owns your software experience in your vehicle in the future. I don't know how that's going to go, but I'm not sure that the
ghost of Steve Jobs is who owns all your data. The ghost of Steve Jobs, as he eats an apple from the great beyond, bathing in delicious ones and zeros. Well, from no buttons to some buttons. So we all know that Volkswagen's infotainment system is awful, just generally terrible. The touch integration is terrible. Bits don't light up. I drove a Golf a few years ago that had all red tiles that all looked the same, so you couldn't see what you were pressing or what you were doing. It's generally been met with a giant ick from people who have driven them or bought them. But it's okay, because with the ID2 or in the ID2 all concept, a sort of smaller EV, I think looks rather nice, looks a bit polo-ish, mega. Buttons are coming back. Not lots, not all, but some. So HVAC and volume and things like that, the useful stuff essentially, will be physical buttons. Now, personally, I think that's a great relief. I like cars with buttons. It means you know when you've hit your mark, like some haptic feedback on a screen is pleasant, I guess, but it's not the same as actually pressing a button and knowing exactly what you're doing. So I think this is a good, especially given VW's track record. Patrick George, what do you say?
I'm in the pro button camp, and I know that makes me like a Luddite to a lot of people. Like, I'm in this Lightning right now, which is full of buttons. And a few weeks ago, I was in the Rivian R1S, similar concept, similar size, really world-class car. I really liked the Rivian a lot. I was very impressed with it, but I did not love that I get two little buttons on the steering wheel and like, give me buttons. This F-150 has lots of buttons, lots of things for me to touch and control, and not little slider panels or haptic buttons or software I have to talk to. This is great. And I think that this has been, for VW, one of the most pervasive complaints with not just their EVs, but their gas cars.
All of their cars. It was, yeah, I think it was the Mark 8 Golf that this new Jazzy infotainment system debuted in, or one of the early cars it was in. Everyone I know who drove it went, great car, infotainment's rubbish, kills the experience. It's the bit you interact with every single time, and it was just awful. So yeah, it's been a problem now for nearly 5 years, I guess? 4 years?
How long it takes these companies to reverse course.
I
think this is a positive move.
Yes. Can I just toot my own horn here for a second? Because if you go watch my Volkswagen ID.4 review, I literally say they have these touch components and they will be switching back because they are going to get a lot of complaints, because this is not new news, people. We have seen this before. I was on the launch of the MKZ back in 2013 when it first came out, and all they had was touch configurations for all the climate controls and everything like that, and all we just heard complaint. I don't like this. I can't see what I'm doing. I can't feel what I'm doing. So ultimately, within the next couple of years, Lincoln ended up switching over back to buttons. And it's like, why do you guys keep trying to do this? Like, people want physical buttons. Like,
they are useful.
If you have voice commands, then fine. You can do a lot through there, and you kind of can. But the voice commands have to be good, and most aren't. So just give us buttons, dang it.
Hazel, round us out before we move on to our predictions, hopes, and dreams for the next year. What do you think about Volkswagen doing a swift about turn?
I get scared and confused by cars where I don't have to turn a key. So this is all, I'm all in favor of this.
Excellent. Good. Right. Well, that is our news for the week. But don't go away, because we've all been having a little bit of a think. The boss man set us some homework. He asked us to think of, the big thing or the big drive that we experienced this year, and also make a prediction for 2024. So, seeing as he set us the homework, it's best off to start with the boss man. Patrick George, what was your big thing in 2023?
Also, this homework idea was issued when, like, we thought that this was going to be a slow week for news. Clearly, my predicting game isn't very good, but we're gonna try it anyway. So, what we decided to do this year was, as this is the last podcast of the year, we were going to like recap like a really big lesson or big thing, big important story from this year that meant that we think matters a lot, and then talk about where we think things are going next year. And I think on the first front, this was a really mixed year overall. I think the big winner in the EV race is still Tesla, honestly. Like, sales bear that out. Everyone went to the supercharger network. Like, they kind of won this year, however you feel about that company. But honestly, like, the dark horse winner for me, and this is maybe a bit of an obvious take to some, is Hyundai is crushing it. The Hyundai Motor Group is crushing it. That's the one to watch. Like, we think of Hyundai's like, oh, those are cool cars in America. Like, oh, they're getting cooler with these EVs. But like, I don't think most people understand the degree to how good these cars have gotten. Like, spec-wise, like, they are the Ioniq cars, the Kia EV6, all those EGMP platform cars, the spec better than a lot of luxury cars I drove this year, like Mercedes and Porsche. They're in some ways better than the Teslas now in terms of like range on the Ioniq 6. And they're selling well, they're setting sales records. And the parent company's like, yeah, we planted our flag, like, we're doing this. And they keep saying every month, like, oh, we're not going to do this gas engine plant, we're not going to do this ICE car plant, we're going to do an EV plant instead. Like, they are slowly becoming like a major powerhouse in this space, and like, I don't think enough people see it yet, but like, give it a year and they're going to. So I don't know, I think I've just been really impressed with what I've seen from the Koreans, and anyone who underestimates them is really going to do so at their own peril. As for a prediction for next year, I think 2024 is going to be a messy year on the EV front for a couple of reasons. I think it may even be a more of a year of contraction while we kind of figure out what phase three is and all these car companies get their together or don't. The EV tax credit sucks already. Like, we have a story coming out later today about the cars that don't qualify anymore, which is almost all of them. hilariously, the Chevy Bolt still qualifies for tax credits. Like, that little thing just will not die. It's like been canceled, and it still sells in record numbers every month. And the specs aren't as great, but the damn thing just won't go down. But like, it's all these cars are going to lose their tax credit. I think EVs are going to be a major football in the election, which I'm not looking forward to. I think it's going to be a weird year around sales, and you know, a lot more up and down. Like, a lot of the people who bought this year, who were those kind of earlier adopters, like the second wave early adopters, maybe they got their EVs and then need to wait a while. And then everybody's waiting for everyone to go to NACS and the Tesla plug in 25 onwards. So I think it's going to be an odd year, but like after that, it's this, I think maybe this, whatever transition we're in is probably going to be happening after this year is over in force, but we'll see. You know, that's where I'm sitting at things.
Well, I certainly agree that it'll be messy because of everything you said. But with the NACS issue in the US is obviously it's a thing that's happening. Over here, it just isn't. So I think on that side of things, at least Oirope will hopefully be okay because you just buy the same car you would have done anyway. I'm curious though, when the switch is made, will a car that has the old type connector be worth less on the used market because it doesn't have the Tesla plug?
I'm wondering about that too. And I think that's a story we may end up be doing in January, is that I think that some of those, the values are gonna plummet on those cars. And like, I know, frankly, it is probably a little smarter to lease right now because you still get the full tax credit no matter what you buy. But I think that's going to be an interesting thing to see. I mean, like, frankly, we won't see the effects of the NACS rollout for years. Like, long term, everything will go to that. But it's not like fast charging is just going to die overnight. But yeah. I think that value drop is going to hit hard. And if, I guess, you know, if you're willing to put up with, you know, that plug issue, you might be able to get a great deal on something really awesome. You know,
you get a really lovely Porsche Taycan that's just bang on, but doesn't have the right plug. Lacey, what were your big things for 2023? What was the thing that got you going?
I think the biggest thing is the NACS transition that everyone had finally, thanks to Ford, decided to jump on the NACS train, and that now we're going to see EV adoption be something that is considered more, because the headache of the charging infrastructure as it exists now is going to have some relief coming in 2024. Adapters will become available within the first, I think they said spring was the initial, so Q1, Q2, we're going to start to see adapters, and that's going to open the floodgates for a lot of people to just not have the concern that they can have reliable charging and going literally wherever they want to go in the North American market for the most part. So I think that was the biggest story of the year, and I think it's going to be great for EV adoption. I agree with you, Patrick, that on the front of the, you know, that there's going to be retraction, especially considering that most of the new EVs are not going to be getting the $7,500 tax credit. It sucks, but I also don't think it's necessarily too bad of a thing. But I do think that the restrictions are a little bit, like, it is becoming really hard for automakers to meet these criteria. Because if you guys don't know, basically what is happening is that every year by like about 10%, the increase of the amount of components or the minerals, so that's how you can get the credit. One is you have to meet a certain amount of the battery components made in the North American market, or from a friendly entity or whatever. And then the second is the battery components. So minerals and components, that's how you get the full $7,500. Otherwise it's split. And that ratchets up every single year. So I think it started at like 50% for the minerals. I could be mixing these up. And then the 60% for the components. And then it just goes up every single year. So now these companies need to adjust the supply chain in a big way in order to meet these requirements. But the problem is, I've been thinking about this. Is like, well, how are these car companies, like, what is the restriction as far as how many suppliers are offering these components that qualify or minerals that qualify? Like, how many are there? You know, you're pigeonholing the manufacturers and only having a smaller pool of suppliers to choose from. So they might not have that cost advantage to be able to, you know, find what's the best option in that regard. So it's interesting on that front. But ultimately, what I think is that the NACS was the big story. My prediction is that the used EV tax credit is going to be more impactful for EV sales than new EV tax credit, just because we're seeing less that are going to be qualifying. But also what I think is going to happen is that, you know, EVs are so expensive. And yes, I do think that the prices are going to drop in the coming year for a couple of reasons. One, because the supply chain will continue to get built, but also because, you know, dealers, I think, still notoriously are known for markups and things like that. And when it comes to the used EV tax credit, there's kind of just like this really forced regimen of like, okay, it has to be $25,000 for the used EV with all the fees included. And then you can get up to $4,000 off. And I think there are going to be a lot of people in like the middle income range that are going to say, okay, I want a secondary car and I want to consider this because I can get a really good deal on it. And that will drive EV adoption in a new way that, you know, is kind of like the next level of, like you were saying, early adopters. Yes. Okay. We've pretty much gotten that out of the way that people know and did a lot of research, but I think it's going to be crucial when these middle income or like, you know, that type of, buyer ends up getting an EV as their commuter or secondary car to really drive. I think it'll be more impactful for that group of people to be adopting EVs because they're doing it as a cost and initiative and not necessarily because they want to be environmentally friendly. So that's my take on that, is used EVs will, that tax credit will be driving the EV market for the upcoming year. And again, I do think that, same with you, Patrick, the election is going to have a huge impact either way, because we're either going to see that these incentives stick or it's going to completely away. It could. So,
yeah.
Could you imagine what happens if they go away? That's just bad.
I think that would just, I'm not trying to be like partisan here, but rather state a fact, because like if you get someone who's not Joe Biden in the White House, like Trump rolled back the fuel economy standards when he was in office, he pushed them back, and that pushed back the development of more fuel efficient cars, development of more EVs, like that will still happen over time, but I think it's going to happen a lot slower if Biden's out. And you know, there's a question of, you know, is that we going to be able to meet our climate goals? Are we going to have a competitive auto industry in this country if that happens? Unclear. Too about the tax credits, they just still continue to be utterly confounding to a normal person. Normal person just asked me, like, so how much money do I get off? And I'm like, well, bro, it depends on where your separators and electrolytes were made. If they were made by a foreign entity of concern or not. Do you know? It's like, feel like just like, buying a Honda Civic.
I know. For anyone that is shopping, though, and why I think it's so impactful for this upcoming year is because it turns into the point of sale. So it gets done at the dealership. So anyone that is selling a used EV had to apply. So they have this portal now where they can process it. So you get it off the hood. You get the price down off the hood. Mm-hmm. You don't have to deal with your taxes and stuff like that. Plus, for anyone that is shopping, for, go to fueleconomy.gov. They have a drop down menu. You'll see in the new year who's going to be able to qualify for it. So you can plug in the exact vehicle that you're looking at and see whether or not they qualify. So just a tip.
Amazing. Thank you. Hazel, what do we think about this year and next?
I feel like I've chosen very me things, and I was just trying to check a fact for one of them. So this year, what I think is really positive is that we have seen, and I know I've been saying this to you, Patrick, for years now, but I am genuinely concerned about how hard car OEMs are going on lithium, and the assumption that lithium technologies and lithium cell builds are going to be the future. Because to me, although lithium is the best technology that we have for this application currently, it is not going to be in perhaps 5 or definitely 10 years. The speed of EV battery development, although the technologies that we're using now aren't actually very new at all, and even things like solid state is not necessarily going to be kind of like the density transformer that is being hoped for. In terms of materials, looking forward to sodium is something that we have to be kind of like planning for. And although at the moment sodium batteries are significantly behind lithium in terms of energy density, there was a point where that was true about, say, LFP batteries, and they're now actually extremely viable. So I was really glad to see this year, because there has been a lot of development in sodium technology, but there's a lot of politics, a huge amount of politics around lithium and around lithium supply chains. It never really seemed to come up. It never seemed to be a prospect that people were really looking at. It's something I've asked OEMs about for years, and they've kind of gone like, well, but CATL, who are a huge battery manufacturer, they work directly with quite a few European and US car brands in terms of delivering these new electric platforms, or sites in the US, actually. I think it's not necessarily US brands. They are building sodium ion car batteries for the Chery iCar, which is a Chinese EV, and BYD just in like mid to late November signed to build a sodium ion battery factory, which I know when they launched the Seagull in way back in like April, they were talking about sodium ion, but they didn't necessarily have it like as a completely spec'd option, and the kind of like more standard blade battery was what was likely to go out with it. But it now looks like they're actually kind of they're into the build phase for those. And I think that's really positive. There's a lot of reasons that moving away from lithium is a good idea, and one of which is that sodium is just a lot more abundant, and so that's just something that's going to be kind of more useful. And also that there is potential, so I'm glad to see movement towards LFP as a technology, because it's much more recyclable in terms of chemistry and in terms of the way the batteries are generally built. And obviously having if we are using lithium, then we should be using it circularly. And also to see the potential for sodium, not just as a something in the future, but like something which is in the immediate. And I think, you know, when we talk about the idea of competing battery technologies and for the need for there to be a competitive platform scene in terms of making improvements to these, making safety improvements, making improvements in terms of transportation of the battery packs, which like we know there's quite a lot of like agitation around transporting around lithium ion, there's a lot that can be done in terms of looking at these different chemistries, because to be honest, nearly every car company or battery maker is basically making the same damn thing. There's like slightly different, you can choose cylinders or pouches depending on where you're heading with how likely you think it is that you're going to start doing solid state and stuff, or if you're AMG and you're basically recreating as close to an F1 battery as you can, then like you've got liquid cooling and stuff in there, but most of the structures are basically pretty similar now. And so to see actually something that is genuinely like a challenger concept as a technology being applied in the space. And I know there's a lot of people who say like, oh, well, it'll be naff and like it's a lie that it's got this density and whatever. But actually, from the experience, like this is BYD and CATL, not like AliExpress saying that they've got this. Like this is
my EV battery
Craigslist.com.
It's crazy Barry in his evil ways. Yeah. I made this in my shed. Do you like it? It's full of chemistries and salt.
This is not a bloke outside a pub kind of like pulling a battery pack out of his coat and saying like, have you had a look at this? Huge companies who there's no incentive for particularly UCATL
yeah.
To be like, hey, we developed a battery technology that like they are a leading technology name in the industry.
They're proper people that do proper things.
Yeah, so there's no need for this. I know there's always a lot of like slightly weird stuff about like, oh well, these, and there are, sometimes there is reason to be cynical about some stats and figures outside coming out of China. I still don't believe NIO about
battery stuffing. Cynical? No.
But in this instance, I don't think there's any reason to believe that they would be committing to actual physical factories and to physically putting these in cars without this being a genuine technology.
So that's mega, but what about your prediction? What's coming next year, Southwell?
So I think we're going to see a road car with 600 kilowatts of regen, which we talk a lot about the need for efficiency, for the need for increasing regen. 600 kilowatts is not a rate of charging that is plausible for you to get out of like a charger as things stand. But with dual motors, then I think it is plausible that you can get it out of the regen on a car, particularly these big heavy cars that we're making. And it's the maximum regen from a Formula E car. Even they don't hit it hugely often, but Formula E cars are actually very light compared to road cars as well. So although they're braking very harshly, it's all a bit different. And I think that you're going to see, and this is going to sound like I know someone who said something that they haven't, I think someone like Jaguar or someone is going to flex that they have a 600 kilowatt regen from two motors, because especially now you're seeing so many dual motor options, and that using that not just as a thing where it's like, oh, you get more horsepower, you get the all-wheel drive, like whatever, but actively saying your car can become more efficient, because at the moment a lot of the time you're seeing like range reduction with dual motors because one of them isn't using regen. But as companies get better at managing this, I think this is going to be something where you can see that direct transfer out straight out of Formula E into high performance road cars, because it's remarkably difficult to say take Formula One engine technology and put it in a road car,
as Mercedes because found out with the AMG One, the legendarily meh AMG One.
Exactly. And like combustion technology and that sort of transfer is very difficult. But actually, although you're dealing with different numbers to some extent and you're dealing with a different way of driving, the regen and the mapping, like we've seen that just straight come out of a Formula E car and get dumped in a road car pretty much. So I think that's gonna, I hope someone does that. I hope someone at least does a roadworthy concept where it can do that.
But actually provably doable, rather than some of the concepts you used to get at, say, the Geneva Motor Show that says, well, this car can run on water. And
I want to see like an EQXX style stunt with something like this with
Koenigsegg. Yeah. Let's get Christian to do this for us, okay? Because he likes EVs. He can do it. He can do it.
We know you're listening, Christian. We share a horse.
I always thought that Christian von Koenigsegg might have been a very powerful scientist from the future, and he's just trying to invent a car that would be fast enough to take him back to his home time. So he can and that's why he does this cool stuff that nobody else understands. He's like, look, I'm just trying to get home. You know,
I made a
9,000 speed gearbox with no clutches, but simultaneously 9,000 clutches, and somehow it just works.
Yeah,
I love that guy.
I do too. He and I share a hairdresser, and I very much appreciate that. I will round us off with a little big story and a little prediction, which makes me feel rather foolish now I think about it. But still, I will hold tight. But my big stuff from this year is how well people have been integrating or playing with EV tech on a smaller scale. So on one end you have a Citroen Ami, which I played with the hard top one in February, I think. It was cold as balls because it was London. But it was fun. And it did its job incredibly well. It was small. It was efficient. It was just a little bit too slow. It does 28 miles an hour, and most of the road speed limits around here are 30. So you would get overtaken by angry people, mostly in toddlers. But on that scale, just as something just to hop around the city, I thought that was absolutely brilliant. And I was so glad to see it in real life and have a play with it. And you do see them dotted around places like London. I know there's a few in Cambridge where my mum lives, because she happily texts me and goes, "I saw one of these. What is it?" "It's a plastic box from France, mother." then on the other side of it, people using EV stuff for fun. So the little car company, I know I've kind of waxed lyrical about their Bentley, or it's Bentley, sorry. But yes, the cars it creates are monumentally expensive. The cheapest Bugatti Type 35, Bugatti Baby, is £45,000. The Tamiya, they're making a big version of a Tamiya RC car. And that's £35,000, so about $42,000-$43,000 US, I think. Lots and lots of money. But on the scale and within their legal space, because the Bentley, they're doing the Bentley Blower, and the Tamiya are road legal vehicles. Within that space, they're pushing the boundaries of what they can buy in, what they can get away with, what they can play with, to create a better product, which is great, a quicker one with better range, better this, better that. They're developing it. They're being a proper car company. Like, the cars undergo serious actual testing. The drivetrain has actual engineers behind it. It's not just some bloke in a shed going, "Give me 45 grand and I'll give you a thing that looks kind of like a Bugatti." And I love the fact that EV, the EV space it's blooming even further for businesses like that. And even so Fiat's gotten in on the Ami game. There's a Topolino, I think they've got out. There's a new Ami, a buggy, which I'm driving next year. They won't let me have it in December because it's cold and it hasn't got any doors.
When will Stellantis synergize the Jeep, Amy?
Oh, can you imagine?
Off-road tires.
What would they call it? The Jeep Crazy Steve. Crazy Barry. The Crazy Barry. Wow. And even Morgan is getting in on the EV game, admittedly on the smaller side of the EV game with the XP1, which it just looks like a mega thing. So I like the fact that people are taking stuff that lots of people, like the mainstream EVs are big batteries, lots of toys, lots of tech, lots of luxury. Other people are going, what if we make it smaller and just muck about with it? And I love that. That's my big thing from the year, fun. My prediction, which might be a little ill-founded, is that I think I have to call it more of a hope, is that over the course of the next year, in the face of all adversity, as the dust settles around them, whatever global event happens next, I'm sure there'll be an invasion of badgers or mouse spiders or something, that legacy manufacturers will just get their heads in the game and think, we've got this, we can do this. They'll have the conversations they need to have. GM will sort the Ultium thing out by stopping pushing all this stuff so chuffing hard and get it right. Just go, look, here's the product. It's here. It's ready. It's fine. There might be some teething issues, but it's okay. Kevin Williams, we're not going to abandon you in Bumble Fudge Nowhere. We promise. that's my hope. Just call me an optimist. Fine. But I just hope that we can all just get along.
You're going to be our elf. You're going to make it happen.
I'm wearing the hat.
Get an EV delivered at least.
An EV delivered, which I think is getting their house in order. I think that's it. But with that,
love the optimism.
With a hint of optimism, as the UK readies to enter itself into a recession, there are global conflicts just everywhere, and no one can make an EV that people can afford. I'd just like to try. But with that brings us to the end of our hour and the end of the Inside EVs podcast for 2023. We'll be back in 2024. I think the first Friday of the month, looking at my calendar because I remembered it earlier but then forgot, is Friday the 5th of January. So we should be seeing you then. In the meanwhile, if you want to contact us, please do send an email to contact@insideevs.com. Huge thanks to our producer behind the scenes, Danny Howard. You are lovely. You are ace and we adore you. Yay. And a big goodbye from us. However you celebrate, Have a wonderful break and some very happy holidays. Now, we're all going to wave slightly awkwardly on the live stream so the people listening don't know what we're doing. Bye!